Today's daf in Masechet Shkalim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Zayin, and we're holding at the Halakha Mishnah on daf Tes Zayin Amud Beit, right at the bottom. So we opened up the parak by discussing the various things that were 13. One of the 13 was the 13 Ishtachavoyos that the Mishnah left open, and now the subsequent Mishnayos are going to be explaining the various 13 that we spoke about. So asks the Mishnah, okay, so where exactly were Eichan Ayu Hishtachavayot Ha'Ela that we mentioned in the first Mishnah? So according to this Mishnah, the Hishtachavayos were keneged the various Sha'arim. So as you walked around the Azarais, each time you passed a Sha'ar, you would be Mishtachave into the inside of the Beis HaMikdash, towards the inside of the Beis HaMikdash, facing the Sha'ar. So there were Arba b'Tzafon, v'Arba b'Darom, Shalosh b'Mizrach, v'Shnayim b'Ma'arav. So basically, they consisted of four gates to the northern side of the Azara, four on the southern side of the Azara, three in the eastern side of the Azara, and two to the western side. And therefore, each one of these was a place where you were Mishtachaveh. So this is Keneged Shlosha Asar Sha'arim. All the Yishtachavayos added up to 13 because, according to this Shita, there were 13 gates. Now, we'll see that not everybody agrees with this. We saw differently in the Sechet Midot, but let's figure out what the 13 gates are here. So let us start from the Sha'arim Dromiim. We'll start on the southern side, and we'll start on Smuchim L'Ma'arav, starting from the west. Now, remember that the west is what is facing us when we're at the Kotel HaMaravi. And that area is the highest spot on top because the Har HaBayit starts sloping downwards as it goes towards the valley between the Har HaBayit and Har HaMishkan and Har HaZeisi. So therefore, that was called Sha'ar HaElyon. That was the highest Sha'ar simply because the ground was highest there. The next one was called the Sha'ar HaDelek. They used to bring the Atzei HaMa'arocha through the Sha'ar HaDelek. And it was paid for by the Delek company, probably, so it's like an advertisement and so on. But anyway, I used to call it Sha'ar HaDelek. Then they had the Sha'ar HaBichorot, because Bichorot were the most frequent thing that people had a chiev to bring, and that was brought b'dorim. So all the Bichoros, the Bim Vafars, and the Bichoros as well, was on the Dorim side, near the place where we would shech them. So that was the Sha'ar HaBichorot. And then there was the Sha'ar HaMayim. What was the Sha'ar HaMayim? Loma Nikra Shmo Sha'ar HaMayim. So there were basically two reasons. The water came in and the water went out from that Sha'ar. In what sense? First of all, the water came in. That was Shabo Machnisin Tzolchit Shomayim Shal Nisach B'chag. That was where they used to go out to bring in the Nisach HaMayim. And that came into the Azara from outside where they collected it from the Gihon. And they made a big celebration there. Obviously, they brought it in. We had the shofros and so on. So that became the name of the actual gate. Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, that is the place where the water is going to be coming out of the Beis HaMikdash miraculously. As we're going to see, we're going to analyze. There's three different places in Tanakh where the Navi describes the Mayim that is going to be coming out of the Beis HaMikdash. So one of them is in Yeshayahu. One of them is in Zechariah. And one of them is in Yechezkel. So we're going to look at all of these Bekeres to get a picture of the Mayim. So these, says Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, is called the Sha'ar HaMayim because the water is going to be coming out from there. And in the Gemara, we'll go through the details of the Psukim. Lu'umatam. Now, facing them, one keneged one on the northern wall, starting again from all the way to the west, like we did in the south. So we had the upper wall was Sha'ar Yechanyahu. We'll go through the names. Sha'ar HaKorban, Sha'ar HaNashim, and Sha'ar HaShir. So why did we call the gate that was all the way to the Ma'arav, why was that called Sha'ar Yechanyahu? Shebo Yatza Yechanyahu Begaluto. Yechanyahu, when he was summoned by Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar made off with the Kelim, the Beis HaMikdash, so this is where he went to his terrible Golos, in Bavel. The others, which are called Sha'ar HaKorban, those were Korbanos that were Kotche Kotchim, and the Shechita, The Kutcher Kutcher is Betzafain, so they had the Knisa directly to the Tzafain. Shar HaNoshim is a Machlokas, because we know that we have a Machlokas about whether Noshim are Somchot Reshut. So if you hold Noshim as Somchot Reshut, so then it's a reference to the Mokom of Smicha, and that's Rabbi Yossi Shita. If you hold like Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon that Noshim are not Somchot at all, so then it's called the Shara Nashim because the women would stand there to be close to the Korban, to be Eimed al Korbanam. So obviously from the Ezra's Noshim, there's no way to be close to the Korbanis that were going to be Nishchat by the Mizbeach with Tzatzafen. So they had a gate in that area that was called the Shar HaNashim. And then there was the Shar HaShir, which was also the entrance to the Lishkas Beit HaMoked. And there, it's called Shar HaShir because that's where they used to bring in the various musical instruments for the orchestra. So let's go back now to Mizrach. So Bamizrach, of course, we had the famous Shar Niknor. Now that was not visible from outside of the entire Azor, because the Ezra Snoshim, of course, had to go into the Ezra Snoshim to be in front of the Shari Niknor. The Shari Niknor were on top of the stairs that went up from the Ezra Snoshim to the Ezra Yisrael. Those were the Sharim that the miracles had been done with, that they came up on the side of the ship, and so on. Now, to either side of the Shari Niknor, there were Pishpashim. Pishpashim are smaller gates. We're counting them in the number of 13. So there were Shnei Pishpashim, are you low? And those were smaller gates where you could enter without opening the main gate, and you could get behind the Shar Niknor. And then all the way facing, if you be climb up the Kotel HaMaravi, and you would get to the back of the Azora, so then you would note that there were actually two small gates where you could get into the area that was behind the Heichal. And those gates did not have any names. They were barely used. And those were also, however, if you encircled the Azorais, you would be mishtachev kineged those two gates as well. Okay, so that's our Shlosh Esrei Hishtachavayot. Now, the Gemara immediately points out that this means that if the Mishnah is saying that the Hishtachavayot were kineged gates, and it lists 13 gates, then it has to be going like Abba Yosef and Yochanan, because the Rabbanan who argue in Midas, they say that there were only 7 Sha'arim, so obviously can't be going according to them. They don't count the Shnei Pishpashim, they don't count the two gates in the back, they don't count the gate from the Lishkas Beis HaMoked. According to them, they only have 7 gates. So obviously there couldn't have been actually 13 Hishtachavayot, Keneged 13 gates. So Baram Karabonan Shiva Sharim Ayu Bazora. So how did they explain the Ishtachavayot? Al Da'atayo de Rabbanan Echan Ayu Ishtachavayot Alalu. So where then were the 13 Ishtachavayot? Ah, they understand the Ishtachavayot like the Mishnah in Midas. Where over there it says, Kahide Tanina Taman. There were Shlosh Esrei Pratzot Hayubo. So there used to be a Soreg. Remember that the Soreg was like we have the kind of wood that you have, you know, for an Ezra's Nashim. We have like a lattice wood. So the Soreg was like a lattice work. It was a big machlokas. We showed him, according to the Rambam, the Soreg went around the entire Azores. According to some of the other Ishainim, the Soreg was only in the entryway when you were coming in from the east, but it didn't surround the entire thing. Now, the Soreg drove the Goyim crazy because there was a big sign on the Soreg that Goyim, anybody, any guy that goes beyond the Soreg is going to be killed. And this, like, made the Greeks absolutely inflamed. And because this was the Gezerah, that you can't have anybody that is Tomei Meis, even though Tomei Meis was the most kal, interestingly, in terms of Knesset L'Megdash, but nobody Tomei Meis, which included the Gezerah and the Goyim and so on, was allowed to go past the Soreg. So when the Yevanim started taking it out against the Beis HaMikdash, they smashed through the Soreg in 13 different places. And this was connected to their attack on the 13 Brises of Bris Mila. Anyway, so they wanted to show that they don't even hang about the Soreg. Barnea will send us a picture of the actual sign that is still around, the sign in Greek that mentions...
I'm getting it, but it's not hanged, they were strangled.
Okay. That actually is still around, that warns in Greek of anybody walking in past this place. So you can really see why it got them furious. Anyway, so the Malchus Yavan were Poratzum. And then when the Hashmonaim defeated the Greeks, so then Chosru Gedorum, so they fixed all of those areas, and they were Gezer, that there should be Shloshes Reishtach Avoyes, that people should remember what we went through with the Greeks in the Hatzol of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kineged, those 13 places. So therefore, we have two very, very different approaches to where these Shloshes Reishtach Avoyot were. Now, Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, we just mentioned very briefly in the Mishnah. So I'll leave it to Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov. So we have a mention for a moment of water that will be coming out of Yerushalayim. So now we want to take a look a little bit more on that, because that's a reference to the Nevi'ahs, the opening Nevi'ahs that we have about that is Be'achris Hayomim is in Zechariah. So it says, V'haya b'yom ahu yetzu mayim chayim mi'Yerushalayim. So this is a whole beautiful description of water that's going to be coming out of Yerushalayim, chetziyam el hayam ha-kadmoni, v'chetziyam el hayam ha-acharon, b'kayetz u'v'choref yiyeh. So half of that water will be flowing out to this, to the yam that's in the east, which is the Kadmoni, which obviously a reference to the Yam HaMelach, and from there down. And the other part will be going to the western sea, which is a reference to the Mediterranean. So now we want to analyze in the Brisa, based on all of the different circumstances. So this Brisa puts together mitzad hasvara what we're looking at. So the Brisa says like this: Tony, mi beit kodesh hakodashim ad haparochet kekarnei silai uvilai. It should say. So there's a Greek word silai uvilai. It's one word silai uvilai, and it's a reference to snails. Now, these snails, they make their little antennae when they want to. And those are very, very thin extensions from their body. And the water that came out from the Beis HaMikdash, from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, started off with an almost invisible, like the antenna of Silai Vilai, coming out from under the parochet, so that you would barely notice it. From the parochet until it got to the Mizbeach HaZahav, it got gradually stronger until it was, get this, it was so big, it was like the antennae on a bug. So the antennae of a chagav, you can imagine that was also barely noticeable. By the time it got from the Mizbeach HaZahav until it got to the Azorah, so over here there's a little bit of the Hagos HaGrot changes this to Mizbeach HaZahav, Ad Miftan Habayit, it was Kechut Shal Shesi. So it was like the thin threads that you have when you're making a warp for a weave. So these were the thin threads. Also, very, very thin, little tiny thin thread-like bit of water that was, you could see, that was coming out all the way up to the Miftan Habayit. And then Mimiftana bayit, all the way till the end of the Azorais, it was kechut shel erev. So that's a thicker thread. That's a woof thread. And then mikan ve'elech, this we darshan from the pasuk, from that point on, where it came out of the shar of the Azorais, it was the size of a pi hapach. So it was like a little perfume bottle. And the amount of water that you would be getting out of that, that's all that was coming out of the actual shar that Reb Eliezer was referring to. Now, it then says, Ksiv, if we put together the story here that we have in Zechariah with the story in Yechezkel, we get a much broader understanding of what was happening. Because in Yechezkel, remember, Yechezkel has a tour guide who is actually a malach dressed like a engineer. And he's showing around Yechezkel for all of the things that were in the Beis HaMikdash. And so he's describing now what he sees, Yechezkel. V'hine mayim mifachim min hakatef hayimanit. I saw water mifachim, so that's trickling water, but it comes from the word pach. So it was the same size as the piapach. That's how we get the idea that as it's coming out of the Beis HaMikdash, it's trickling like the size of water coming out of a pach. So then, and that's coming out of the Katef HaYamanit. Now, Yamanit is always a reference to Dorim. So that's where we get the idea that from the edge, Dorim, which would mean the gate on the Dorim side, this is where the water would come out, and therefore was called, according to Reb Eliezer, the Shar HaMayim. But then, the man, referring to the Malach, was Betzeta Ish Kadim. So as he walked towards the east, and remember that he was carrying this laser measuring thing in his hand, the Kav Biyado, so he walks me 1,000 Amos, and then he crosses that water with me. And at that point, the water is already very noticeable. It's May Afsayim. It's coming up to my ankle. So in other words, it came at Karsula. He then took another jump, Vayomod Elef. He measures another 1,000 Amos with his laser thing. And then he takes me across the water. And at that point, the water's up to my knee. So it's Mayim Birkayim. So that means it's at Birkaya. It get up to Yechezkel's knees. He took another jump of 1,000 Amos, crossed me over, and now it came up to my waist. So Vayomad Elefayavireni Me Motnaim. That means it came all the way up to Motnaya. Then after that, Mikan Ve'elef, beyond that, he took another jump of Elef Amos. It was impossible to cross that river. Vayomad Elef Nachala Shalom Chalavor. Not only that, Afilu Lebiranim Gedolaina Yechola Lavor. But you couldn't get a yacht across that. Why not? Not because of its depth, but because the waters were flowing so rapidly. So as it says over there, Vitzi Adir. Now this Vitzi Adir, this comes from Yeshayahu. But we understand that they're all referring to the same nes of the waters that are coming out of Yerushalayim Lasid Lava. So it says in Yeshayahu, Vitzi Adir Lo Yavrenu, that even a gigantic navy, we use sea for navy, that boy could use even for one giant boat. You couldn't get a battleship across it. Because, this getting back to Yechezkel, because the waters were go'ed, they were rushing so quickly that they became meisachu. What do you mean by meisachu? So we darshan that as one word, misachu, meaning that you weren't able to get across them. So, schiya is, today we use schiya as a reference for swimming. But at the time, the word meisachu would mean boating. Also, anywhere. Milashut, from getting across, however you could get across. So it means there would be no way to cross it in the water. You'd have to get a bridge to go over it. Rav Huna, in our location, they actually refer to boating. Koru l'shayata sachvana. So that's the same lush that is found in this pasuk. And we find the lashon of sachvana as a reference to either swimming or boating. We find it in the description of the churban of Moab. So over there, Yeshayahu uses the word to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be feiras yadav bekirbo kasher yefares hasochel ischot. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will stretch out his hands the way that somebody who's swimming would stretch his hands out to swim. Meanwhile, he's smashing everything in his way. And this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Moab. Okay, now this, the Gra changes this for a very simple reason, because otherwise it shouldn't say Mahu Lischot. This is another definition of Meisachu. So we said Meisachu before is from Soch, but Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Bon is Derech Meisachu. These are water that speak from a lotion of Sicha. Mayim demit malalim ba'alma. These waters are going to be famous throughout the world. So that's the pshat. They are the speakers to the world of Kedushas Yerushalayim. So because of that, some of the Mefarshei Amikra taina that it's a mashal to Kimitzion Tetzei Torah. I don't know. I find that very difficult. I mean, especially since later on, we're going to be derish whether the water is kosher for tefillas mikveh of a nidar, whether it's kosher for mechatas. I mean, it's a little hard to see it as a mushel, but okay, but they derish it as a mushel. So anyway, another approach to meisachu is, as we're going to see, that there's a shita that says, you'll remember this from the Bavli when we discussed this, there's a shita that explains that the meaning of meisachu also is that it was water that allowed people who were deaf, dumb, they're deaf, mute, they weren't able to speak. If they would be exposed to that water, they would start to speak. So that's mismalalim bi'alma, that the world will speak because of them. So k'siv b'yom ha'huyeh mekor niftach le'beit David u'le'yoshvei Yerushalayim l'chatat u'lenida. So on that day, there will be, suddenly, this is a continuation of the original Pesukim in Zechariah. So on that day, there will be a whole new opening for Beis David on the one hand and Yoshvei Yerushalayim on the other hand, for having water for the Chatas, which is a reference to the Parah Aduma, and for having water for a mikvah for Tfilas Nida. So Shmuel Bar Nachman, B'Shem Rabbi Yonason, says that that's, the Pesuk is actually defining differences in the kashrus of the Mayim. So from Beit David till Yoshvei Yerushalayim, so in other words, this is from Ir David till the general Yishuv in Yerushalayim, the water was kosher for Chatas and for Nida. Mikan ve'elech, but from that point on, it got mixed with other rainwaters and other springs that were also sometimes mostly rainwater. And that passed it from the Chatas, because the Chatas, it had to be Mayim Chayim. So from that point on, it was kosher l'nida, but it was puzzled for the Chatas. Rabbi Elazar says, Mi Beit David ad Yoshvei Yerushalayim, it was kosher, I agree with you. It's kosher l'nida v'l'chatas. But Bekan ve'elach, it reached the point where it started to flow down. From the height of Yerushalayim, it started to flow down towards the Yam HaMelach, and towards the Yam HaTichon. And at that point, it was Beit Kataf resulting. And then it became possible both for Nida and for Chatas because it was flowing too rapidly. Now, there's a big machlokas. And this is Nogea Adayom Azeh. Is Katafris possible because of the fact that it's not Mei Mikvah and it's not standing in one place? So then that should not affect it if it is Mayim Chayim. Or is Katafris possible because it's not considered to be one molecule connected to the other molecule at all? In which case, it's even puzzle for mechatas, because it doesn't have a din of mayim of a mayan, because each molecule is separate. That's a big machlokas. So if you learn, like the first approach, the reason it would be puzzle for the chatas is because he also is made that it became mixed with water from rain. And then we're saying, but it would even became puzzle for the mikveh, for the nida, because it was Ketafras. Okay, these are two different ways of understanding it. Now, getting back to Yechezkel. Ksiv. So there it says, Vayomer Eli, so my tour guide says to me, says Yechezkel, that Hamayim ha'ela yotzim el ha'galila ha'kadmona v'yordu al ha'arava uvo ha'yama el ha'yama ha'mutza'im v'nirpu ha'mayim. It's a very strange pasuk. These waters are going to be going to the east in the Galil, and then they're going to go down all the way through the Arava. They're going to come to the Yam, and then they're going to go to the Yam, but the Yam, which is the Yam HaMutzaim. Mutzaim means the Yam that broke out of its place, and this will sweeten the waters. So what does that mean? So the Gemara darshan's like this. This means that they will reach the Yam Shel Samchu. This is the Chula. So that they will reach the Chula Valley, and they will fill up the waters of the Chula. And from there, they will go down to the Kinneret, Viardu Ala Arava, Ze Yam Shel Tveria. And then they'll continue going down through the Yarden, and they'll reach the Yam, Uvo Yama, means they'll reach the Yama Melach. And on the other side, they will be going to the Hayama HaMutzaim. That's a reference to the Mediterranean, Hayam HaGadol. So why? It's actually a reference, as you know. The Yam HaGadol is really a reference to the ocean, which is then seen as having expanded into the Mediterranean. Now, as we know, the Straits of Gibraltar were once actually shut, and the Mediterranean was not filled with water. And it's just a rather recent event, about 6 million years ago, that the Mediterranean got filled with water. It used to be this depression that was extremely desiccant based on findings at the bottom of the Mediterranean. And so we call the Yam HaGadol, the ocean, is the Yam HaGadol, which then expanded into the Mediterranean. So Loma Nikra Shmo Mutzaim. So why do we call the ocean the Mutzaim? Because Kineged Shtei Pa'amim Sheyatza. There were two times that it overflowed into the Mediterranean. One was Bedor Enosh, and one was the Bedor HaPalaga. Says Rebbe Lazar B'Shem Rebbe Hanina, the first breakthrough of the ocean into the Mediterranean brought it up to Calabria. Calabria is in the south of Italy. So basically, it created the Italian boot. The second time in the Dora Palaga, it got all the way up to the Barbary coast, Ad Kipe Barbaria, and that created the Mediterranean along Morocco and Libya and so on, and Egypt, North Africa. And that also became the time that it reached on the Tzad of Eretz Yisrael, till Akko, until Yafo, and so on. So says Rebbe B'Shem Rebbe Hanina, the first time the Yam overflowed, it got until the Barbary coast. The second time was a separate overflow, and that was Bedor HaPalaga. That's when it came to Akko and to Yafo. So it wasn't the same as the way that you explained it. Okay, but the reason that I say it that way is because of the fascinating pasuk in Iyov, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is describing what he says to the Yam. So it says, Ad po tavo velo tosif. So we understand that to mean Ad po, Ad akko tavo velo tosif. Ufo yashit bigaon galecha. Ufo sounds like Yafo, right? So Ad Yafo, Ashit Gaon Galecha, will allow you to have the Gaon, godless, the majesty of your waves to come up till here. So until Yafo, you can basically show off, but you can't overflow beyond Yafo and Akko. Very sweet pasuk. So we're darshaning basically the sounds of the pasuk, which is a phonetic drasha. We find every once in a while phonetic drushes. Okay. Anyway, this explains, I mean, I understand it says near Pu'uamayim. So I understand why we would want the water, which is pure water, to be going towards the Dead Sea, because it's going to be merapa, the Dead Sea, from being overly salty, and perhaps even allow it to break through till the Yam Suf. And I understand why you would want it to go and to have sweet water mixed with ocean water. That's Bishvil Matkan. But what would be the point of going to the Chula and going to Tveria, where over there the water is sweet water anyway? So what exactly is it going to be adding by going up to Yam HaShel Tveria and Yam HaShel Samchu? Says the Gemara, it is going to be an incredible ecological change, because it will bring hundreds of new species of fish all the way up to that area, which are currently only have a few really useful species. And it's Lerabot Dagatam, because it actually says in Yechezkel, Limina Tihye Dagatam. So it is going to be Limina, not to the mean that's there. Lemine Minim Tihye Dagatam. So then that means there's going to be unbelievable new species of fish that will be brought into that area. And it says in a bright, that Shimon Gamliel says, that I once went to Tzidon, and they brought me on one single serving, they had collected 300 different local varieties of fish, with a little piece of each on the serving platter. That was probably only the appetizer, you know, in those days. But anyway, so if they had that kind of fish that was available, then it would be nice to have that kind of fish in Tveria too. Why should I have to go to Tzidon? So to be marred by the type of fish, the water came in Yechezkel for that purpose as well. Anyway, getting back to Yechezkel, so then it says, V'nirpu'u hamayim, But it's so then the parsha, the meaning is v'nir pu'u ha'mayim, that the water will be healed, meaning that they'll turn into sweet water. Bitzotav ugva'av v'lo yirapu l'melach nitanu. The pashtas, as Rashi explains, is that the area that are swampy and the pools that are around the Yam HaMelech will not become sweetened, because we still need to utilize the Yam HaMelech for melech, obviously. And there were such rich mineral deposits there, you don't want to wipe out the mineral deposits. So the Pasha, so the Pasuk is saying that even though the water in the center of the sea will become sweet, but the area around it, all of the places where they were gathering the salt ponds, that will not become sweetened because we need it for melech. But the Gemara is dorish this, as if it's a stira. Ask the Gemara, first you say, v'nirpu amayim, it'll turn sweet, and then you said, lo yirapu amayim. So that means there will be a special place that will be called lo yirapu, so that that place should be salty forever. But every other place will be merapa. Okay, furthermore, so let's take a look at more remazim in the psukim for all of this. And you'll notice that the reason that we're doing this, I mean, it's not simply because we happen to mention that this is the Mayim, the relationship of the Mayim, of the Avodah Sa'odam of the Mayim, which of course is the Avodah on Sukkos of the Mayim that came in, that relates directly to the power of La'avdai V'Lashamrei Liyasid Lavai, where the Mayim comes out for the entire world. But remember the way that we understood the placement of Shkolim, its relationship to Pesachim, and the fact that it was chosen to be included in, and this is from very early times, don't believe the supposed research that shows that this was only done after the time of printing and so on. It isn't true. There's very, very old Kisveyad. There's from the time of the Gaonim. It's clear that Shkolim was part of the Yerushalmi, part of the Bavli already, and that Shkolim had been incorporated with the Lashonis of Bavli and so on. So we suggested that this is because of the Ramban, that Yitzias Mitzrayim is only Mushlam with the actual Mishkan. And not only that, but that Yitzias Mitzrayim is only the first step in an ultimate Hashlama of the Emach HaShecha Gedolah Nefeles. And therefore the Remazim in Masechet Shkalim are to the Geula Lasid Lavai, which is the ultimate extension of Mitzrayim. And note that Mitzrayim was only the beginning of our connection and our shlita over water. And that was the Yosef, that the Arono Shel Yosef, the Hayam Ra'av Vayonos, and that the Koyach of the power of Yosef, which is Alei Ayin, which is a remes to Mayim, and all of Hayom Ra'av Vayonos, and so on, that is only a much lower Badrega than was meant to be the original Darga of Adam, where the Adam actually defines where the water will go, where the water will come. And that's why when we're talking over here, Liyasid Lava and the Pesach for Chatas and for Tahira and so on and so forth, we see that as coming from the Mokom HaTvila and the Mokom of the Brias HaAdam, which was the Mokom HaMizbeach. And therefore, this water is seen as a tiny, invisible thread of water, which is based on the understanding of Adam, and that it expands to completely change the ecology of the earth according to the way it is that the Adam wants to terraform the world in which he lives. So it says about that beautiful stream that it's not only going to be water, so this is a remez to the original trees that were in Gan Eden. Because as the Ramban explains, the trees that were in Gan Eden, since these trees are growing from the Mayim that was La'avdai V'Lashamrei of Gan Eden, they were the same kind of trees. So that they never, lo yibol aleihu, they never died. They never withered. They never ran out of fruit, because that was exactly the Tama Eitz Ketama Pri in Gan Eden itself. And so all along that stream, because those are the waters of Gan Eden, those trees will grow. V'lo yitom piryo l'chodashav yevaker. And the fruit every month will be new fruit will come. So, Tony, Amar Rav Yehuda. If you take a look In Olam Hazeh, the way things are now, so it takes 6 months to grow grain, and it takes 12 months to grow fruit. A tree produces once a year fruit. But latid lavo, the grain is going to grow in 1 month, and the tree, therefore, will have fruit every 2 months. Because it says over here, lechodashav, mashba, 2 months, for its plural months, yivaker, it will come out with a new bikur, a new crop. So apparently, if the trees are going to need 2 months to bring forth new fruit, so then that would mean that the grain, which grows two times that speed, will grow in 1 month. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, no. Fishabolam hazeh, atfuah oseh l'shisha chodashim. You're right about the way that generally we relate the growth rate of grain to tree. By the way, you'll note that the interrelationship of Tfua to Ilan is profoundly connected to Gan Eden, because the original one aspect of the Eitz Hadas was that it was Tfua. It was Chita. And if it was Chita, so then obviously what we're talking about, the growth along this river, we need to interrelate it with the way in which Chita and Eitzim, which we still celebrate when we talk about the din on the Peres HaIlan, is the din on the Tvua, relates to the din of Peres HaIlan because of this, according to Rabbi Yehuda, as Tosfos explains, because the Tvua used to be called an Ilan.
Also
pays exactly. Also pays off the Shavuos. So avalatid lavo, the way I see it, is maintain that relationship, but not the way you had it. The Tfua will grow every 15 days, and the Ilan will get a new fruit every month, because we know that even in the time of Yoel, the Navi, Shekein Matzino Sha'asata Tfua Bimei Yoel L'chamisha Asar Yom V'korv Bimeno HaOmer. Remember, the Gemara describes that we had the incredible, in Tainus, the incredible Nes that took place where once there was no rain at all the entire year until Nisan. And then Yoel said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to go out and plant. And they told him, plant. And when we have a little bit left that we could survive on for another week, we should take the food and we should plant it. Hafal Piken, he says. And they did. And the Nes happened. And that is in the Pasuk there that says, Uvnei Tzion. Gilu v'simchu b'Hashem Elokechem, ki natan lachem et hamore l'tzedakah, v'yored lachem geshem more u'malkosh b'rishon. So in the first month of the year, meaning in Nisan, you got all of the rain that was supposed to start in Cheshvan, the Yore, the Malkosh, and all of it finished in that 1 month, and that was the time in which, like we darshan, the pasuk in Shir HaMaalos, that the bo yavo berina, so the original, while they were going in one direction, they were crying because nothing was growing, and by the time they had gone turned around the other direction, no sialu meisav. So it was a nes that it grew literally in front of their eyes, and they were able to bring the omer that year from the crop that was 15 days old. So if that is a gilui, obviously that's a gilui of the keach of Yemei Samashiach. So then that means that Lasidlovo, it's certainly not going to take more than 15 days, in which case the tree would take a month. So then how does Rabbi Yossi understand the use of the plural, L'chodashav Yivaker? He'll say that means in the month, meaning every single month. That's the point. V'kol chodesh v'chodesh yebevaker. So it'll be a new crop of fruit every single month. And how do we understand the words, the aleu litrufa, that the leaves will be good for trufa? So Rabbi Yochanan says, the leaf will be good for trufa is because of tama etz ki tama pri. So it's a lashon of trufa, not with a tuf, but rather with a tet. So tarpe, it becomes teref for someone who sucks on it. You suck on the leaf. And the lashon of teref is mizena, and it provides you with nourishment and food. You don't need to eat the fruit in order to get the nourishment of the tree. Rav and Shmuel, they understand that it means literally trufa. So chad omar la'atir peh shelamalan, v'chad omar la'atir peh shelamatan. So again, the way that the Mefarshim in the Bavli explain it is that it's the same as the next shita. So peh shelamalan means that it will allow you to, if somebody, chas v'shalom, doesn't have the ability to speak, and he's a deaf mute, it will open his mouth and he will be able to speak. And the other one says it's la'atir pesha lamatan, to open up the womb, the mouth of the womb, for women who have been unable to have children. But the Oruch explains that Rav and Shmuel, they learned kipshute. La'atir pesha lamalan means just a physical help for people who need help in eating, they've lost their appetite, or they can't go to the bathroom, is la'atir pesha lamatan. And according to him, Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, they're the ones who learn that it means chadamar la'atir pe akarot, chadamar la'atir pe ilmim. So the way Rashi was learning, it's the same, it's just different ways of saying the same thing. So women who are bare, that's pesha lamata. La'atir pesha ilmim is pesha lamala. Okay, so that was the 13 that we had, Ulamatam Bitzafon, and then we found, according to the Rabbanan, that it was connected to Soreg. So now talking about the damage that the Umay Sa'ilam did to the Beis HaMikdash. So we talked about the Yevonim, but at Motzik, Bisha'asha, Allah Nebuchadnezzar Lekan, when Nebuchadnezzar came up here to Eretz Yisrael, he was above Yoshev Lo Bedofanei Shel Antokia. So he put his army on the outskirts of Antioch, and Sanhedrin heard about this, undoubtedly from Barnea, and Yotza Sanhedrin on one of his Antioch trips. V'yotza Sanhedrin Gedela Likrosa. So the Sanhedrin came out to greet Nebuchadnezzar. V'omrolo, they asked him, have you come back because you want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? Yiyazman Abayit Azele Charev. So he said to them, look, I made a mistake, and I gave over the Malchus to a guy that I don't trust anymore. So, Oto Shimlachti Alechem Tenuli, give me the guy that I made as your king, hand him over to me, because he's a rebel, and I'll go back. So they came and they told Yehoyachin, Melech Yehuda, Nebuchadnezzar Boimach, you have to go. Nebuchadnezzar wants you. So this was like a crazy story that we see in a number of other locations. What happened was that Nebuchadnezzar, when he got back to Babel, they told him, what are you, crazy? You made Yehoyachin the king. If he comes from a family of rebels, you ain't going to get a good kid out of a family of rebels. You should have him knocked off too. So he immediately realized he made a mistake. Nebuchadnezzar had a certain, as we see in many places, he had a certain openness to Klal Yisrael about him, and a certain naivety in general about things that he could control. And it was like a certain good streak in him that used to try to find ways of relating to things. But anyway, they persuaded him that he was being very naive. So he turned right around, parked in Antioch, and he wanted to get rid of Yehoyachin. Okay, so this Yechoniah, they say, you got to get out of here. So this was the story of that gateway of Yehoyachin. So what did he do? Kivan Shishama Miyam Kach, he realized there ain't no way that Nebuchadnezzar is going to be happy just with him. And Natam Avtechot Shel Beit HaMikdash, Alah L'Gago Shel Heichal, this is the same story that we find in so many other places of the Kehanim, the Pirchei Kehuna. So here it's Yehoyachin that took the keys to the Beis HaMikdash, went up to the roof of the Heichal, and he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, obviously, you considered us to be ne'amanim, and you gave us the keys to your bias. Now it's clear that it's over. And akshav, she'inanu ne'amanim, you don't trust us anymore. You want to take the Beis HaMikdash away? I give you back the keys. So it's a machlokes, amoroyim, tre amoroyim. Chad amar, zirakan va'od lo yardu. One says he threw them up to the Shamayim and they never came down again. There came an image of a hand from the Shamayim and took the keys out of his hands. And that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically had told them, I'm finished with you guys. So Kivan Shira'u Kol Chore Yehuda came. So when all of the Gedolei Yehuda, son of Sanhedrin, saw this, they went and committed suicide. It was the end of Yerushalayim, the end of the Beis HaMikdash, and Adu Dichtiv, that's why we find in Yeshayahu that he describes Masa Geich Zayon. The Geich Zayon is the valley of all of the the hopes and the visions that Klal Yisrael has. So it's a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. And Malach HaEfoki Alita Kulach LeGagot. It's not even clear what this is referring. What has happened? Why have all of you gone up to the roofs? Teshuot Blea Yir Homiya Kirya Lizad. This was such an incredibly busy city, a place of constant tumult, a town that was so happy, was so full of life. How can that be? Chalalayach lo chalalecherev. There was no fight. Nobody was killed by a sword. Lo meitei milchama. That everyone should have given up and committed suicide is absolutely incredible. This was the story of the exit of Yechaniah. So you think we've got tzoras. Tough times. Halacha Gimel. Sir Richard, our Amar Kol. Maybe he doesn't want to call an Amar Kol. Maybe he needs to be called a Catholic. Our very Catholic Richie. So the next thing we want to talk about, of course, is the expansion on the opening Mishnah. And the next expansion after the Yud Gimel Ishtachavayot would be the Yud Gimel Shulchanos. So we're going to list the Yud Gimel Shulchanot. Shlosha Asar Shulchanot Hayu B'Mikdash. Where exactly were these 13 Shulchanot? Well, 8 of them were made out of marble. And that was in the Beit HaMitbachayim, which was next to the Mizbeach, to the Tzafon. They were used because they were right next to the Taba'ot. That's where we would shech the animals, B'tzofay. And then they would wash off the Kravayim on these special, which are still used today, marble tables to keep everything very cool. So stone keeps things cool, and that way the meat would be preserved. And then there were Shnayim, B'ma'arav HaKevesh. Then there were 2 additional ones that were to the west, not to the north. They were to the west of the ramp that was going up to the Mizbeach. One of them was made out of marble. One of them was made out of silver. And on the marble one, they used to put the Evarim that were being brought up, and then the Kohanim would take them from there and bring them up the Kevesh. And, of course, we wanted to keep those Evarim cool. And the Kesev, that was used to put the, every day they would take out the klishores, and they would put the various klishores on this table of silver. And there were actually tzadi gimel klishores. There were 93 different klishores that were taken out, as the Gemara explains elsewhere. Then there were another 2 that were on the porch, and that was inside the porch, mibifnim, and they were right next to the opening where you go into the heichal. One of them was made of shayish, and one of them was made of pure gold. Now, on the Shayish one, they would put the Lechem Hapanim after it was baked on Erev Shabbos. So they would put it on there to keep it cool. And that was on the way in to the Shulchan that would be brought in on Shabbos, of course, when they switched the Lechem Hapanim, the new Lechem Hapanim. And then when the old Lechem was taken out, they would put it Al Shel Zahav, because you couldn't take it off of a Shulchan Shel Zahav, which was the Shulchan in the Heichal, and put it on something less than Zahav, because the halacha is Ma'alin B'Kodesh V'lo Moridim. We never go down in status. Baruch Avram? Baruch Avram. Yeah. We never go down in status. So because of that, we had to have a golden table for the way out, and then there was an additional, of course, the table, and that was the Echad Shel Zahav, the table that was made for the Mishkan, Mibifnim, She'alav Lechem Hapanim Tamid. So Tani, Al Shel Kesev. And the Braisa does not say Shayish. The Braisa says, some of the Gersaot of the Mishnah actually say Echad Shel Kesev, Echad Shel Zahav, and not Echad Shel Shayish. So there's apparently 2 different Shitas. Okay. I mean, that's the way the Yerushalmi understands it. It's 2 different shitas. Some of the Rishonim, including Rashi, tries to explain it away of this kesev. But it's clear here that this was a machlokes. So Rabbi Yossi, B'shem Reb Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, and Reb Chananya says, I think it was B'shem Reb Yochanan. Forget about that. Leskan shel kesev. This is a mistake. Don't put in kesev into our Mishnah. Even though the Braisa says kesev, it's not true. Because kesev would have heated up the bread, and therefore it would have made it spoil more quickly. So what, says the Gemara? I thought that was the whole point of the Lechem Aponim, is that it stayed warm the whole time, no? Lo kein tani, ze echad min hanisim shenasu bebeit hamikdash, shekeshem shayu menichin otocham, kach hayu motzim otocham, shenemar lasum lechem chom biyom yilakcho. So that's mamish, isn't that the whole point? That like it's used, it's meant to stay warm, and it never spoiled. So why in the world would we be trying to cool it off with the shayish? Why not give it the covet of shel kesef? And that's basically what the Braisa is saying. Says the Gemara, that may be true. But says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, ein maskrim ma'aseh nisim. We do not bring anything miraculous into halacha. That's ridiculous. You have a chiyuv to take care of the lechem aponim. So take care of it. But you're going to say, oh, but it's miraculous anyway? That's nuts. So that's basically, I mean, you don't even mention ma'aseh nisim, except that to realize what's going on. But to mention it as part of normal dialogue, well, we don't have to worry about that because it's miraculous. Nothing is miraculous. Ein sumchim al hanes. Bon kumei Rabbi Ila. Lo haya sham lechem. What would be the din if there was no lechem available? Can you leave the lechem on the shulchan l'shana haba'ah? Omalon k'tiv. V'natata al ha'shulchan lechem panim lefanai tamid. So in the Bavli, the conclusion is, afilu hoya sham yomim rabim, it's perfectly okay. Over here, the conclusion is, lechem lefanai tamid means lechem panim is all that I care. Not, note, it doesn't say lechem ha'panim. It's lechem panim, I don't care. Even if it's pasul, it's part of the way that the shulchan has to be. It has to have lechem on it. Now, some understand that to mean that the lechem would actually become pasul if it stayed on the shulchan. But that is a contradiction to the lashon in the Bavli, where it says, beferish afilu yomim rabim, it remains kosher. And that, of course, is the din, that lina is not poselet when it's on the mokum, that is, it's mokum kedusha. It's like being on the mizbeach. Lina is not poselet barosh hashem mizbeach, and lina is not poselet barosh hashem shulchan. All that it's saying over here is that if chas v'chalila, we were in such a tight spot that we not only didn't have any lechem at all to be able to put on the shulchan, but the lechem that we had been nifsal, leave the lechem posel that's there. That's the pashtus of the meaning of our sugya. Asara shulchanot asa Shlomo. Shlomo HaMelech, we know, he made additional shulchanot and additional menorahs. So it says, Tichtiv v'yar shulchanot asara, v'yanach b'hecha, chamisha miyamin v'chamisha mismol. So what do you think that means? He put these 10 tables to the right and to the left. You think it means he put it to the right and the left of someone who walks into the hecha? That's ridiculous. Because in temar chamisha b'darom v'chamisha v'tzafon, remember, if you go to the left when you walk in, then you're going to the south. If you go to the right when you walk in, then you're going to the north. So then that would mean that he put 5 shulchanot to the south? That's crazy. Halo ena shulchan kosher elo betzofen? Shema v'ashulchan titena tzela tzofen? It's part of the din of the shulchan that it has to be in the north. So why would he put it to the south? So that can't be the pshat. So ma'ela ma'a talmud lomar chamisha miyamin v'chamisha mismol. What it means is 5 to the right of Moshe Rabbeinu Shulchan and 5 to the left of Moshe Rabbeinu Shulchan. And even though he had all of these extra Shulchanot, the Kohen would not be Mesader the Lechem Aponim on these other Shulchanot. He would only be Mesader the Lechem Aponim al Shel Moshe Bilvad. Shenemar, et HaShulchan Asher Alav Lechem Aponim. So there, even in Malachim, we talk about one shulchan that had the lechem ha'panim, not 11 shulchanot with the lechem ha'panim. So these were symbolic shulchanot. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudaimer, not true. Al kulam haya misader, because there's another pasuk that says, et ha'shulchanot va'aleihem lechem ha'panim. Okay, you should just know the general approach is that the Yerushalmi really doesn't care about most details. So when we bring up a sugya, if it isn't the central place of the sugya, we don't go down to all the nitty-gritty. You may have noticed that a lot of questions are just left hanging. We don't say a word. We don't say teiku. We don't know nothing. We just move on as if nothing happened, right? This has happened again and again throughout the Masecha. That's standard fare for Yerushalmi. The Bavli is very much like Tosfos, because the Bavli wants to square all of the different occurrences of something and make sure that we understand how it works in detail. And so because of that, the sugya is much more mefutach in the Bavli. In the Bavli, it asks the obvious questions that it doesn't even ask over here. And that is, if you really have 10 shulchanot that are aligned, then there's no possible way for the kohen to get in to be misadar it. It also explains that it's possible that both psukim are true and that they would put only one shulchan at a time, but they would alternate the shulchanos. So then the shulchanot could have the lechem upon him. And it also explains that it doesn't mean literally to the right and the left. It means in two rows. And that way there was plenty of room with the Shulchan Shomesh in the middle. All of that is discussed. I hear the Gemara, it doesn't even bother to make sense because it only talks about the 10 Shulchanot and pretends that there was no Shulchan Shomesh. And when it analyzes the 10, it just multiplies the two ames of the shulchan times 10, and it leaves out the shulchan shomesh, which in the Bavli it says, but wait a minute, where do they put the shulchan shomesh? We don't even bother asking that over here, which is, again, classic Yerushalmi. I just want you to remember the sugya, because since we're talking about the shulchanais, I can't not mention the fact that there were the Azar shulchanais of Shlomo HaMelech, and since we spoke about the mikum of the shulchanot, I have to bring that up, but, you know, please, let's not get into all of the details over here. Okay, so we'll ask some basic questions, but we'll really leave it hanging. So, okay, says the Braisa, how were the shulchanot arranged? So the Tanakama, the Rebbe holds that they were Mizrach u'Maariv hayu netunim. So then that means they were in a straight line from east to west, all along the northern wall. That's how Rebbe learns, which makes sense. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon says, no, actually, they were placed from north to south. Wait a minute. I mean, if you're going to tell me like Rebbe that they went all along the northern wall, so then it makes sense, because then all of them were Petzafein, and all of them were Ru'uyin for Sheiras. But if you say Tzafen V'Dorim, so then half of the Shulchanot would have been in the Tzadorim, and you're not allowed to be putting Lechem on Tzadorim. Fine. No answer. Again, as I mentioned to you in the Bavli, there is an answer.